This is an iHeart podcast.
A bad day to be a Biden. We'll talk about that tonight. Margo Cleveland's going to talk about the legal stuff. Why are they suing the State Department? We're going to talk about veterans, communist street scum. All that's coming up on I'm Right. Okay, I know what's on your mind. I know what's in the news. The Hunter Biden, Joe Biden stuff from today. And I'll get to that in a moment. I need to do something right off the top before we get to that. Language. The language you use, the language I use, it is important. Remember this. Remember, the communist, because he's always spreading his demonic religion, he's always planning, always plotting. Now, there are negatives to that, obviously, but it allows him to move and act with a purpose at all times. And he speaks with a purpose at all times. They are very purposeful with the language they use. Very purposeful. They don't use words by accident. And you see one part of the system repeating the exact same language that another part uses, because they understand the importance of language. So let's get something clear right now for you, me, everybody, every single Republican out there, everyone on the right, you when you're talking to liberal Aunt Peggy. When it comes to Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, the payments here, the payments there, it's not whether Joe Biden was involved in Hunter's business. Hunter Biden is a 50-some-year-old crackhead, prostitute-addicted loser with no skills and no power and nothing to sell at all. Hunter Biden does not have a business. There's no Hunter Biden business. It's Joe Biden's business. Joe Biden's business. He is the one who had and has something to sell. I know it sounds like I'm raising my voice, but I get so frustrated with the right and how we will actually, even while we're arguing with them, we will adopt the language the left uses, thus giving them a leg up in whatever the argument is. You will hear the GOP, now you're going to hear it, and now it's going to drive you crazy. You will hear the GOP time and time again in the coming weeks talk about Hunter's business and whether Joe was involved. And now you're going to pull your hair out so much you'll look like me by the time it's done. It's Joe Biden's business. Hunter was the bag man. Joe Biden was the big cheese. Joe Biden was the one with something to sell. Now what happened today? Well, Hunter Biden got in trouble. Joe Biden is in serious trouble. Impeachment inquiry is a go. Are they going to actually end up impeaching him in the House? Probably not. Remember, we had a 4-seat majority. Then we kicked out George Santos. Then we had a congressman retire. Then another congressman retire. Now, that's a 1-seat majority. So, okay, you get an inquiry passed. That is important, keep in mind. What does that mean? That means in an election year, the House is going to have much more power than it had before to call witnesses, drag people in front of the House, and make them answer some very hard questions. That's an important thing. It's important to make Democrats look bad in an election year. And the more we expose the Biden crime family, the worse Democrats are going to look. There's a benefit there. It's not as if it's nothing. There's a benefit in having an impeachment inquiry. Is the impeachment vote going to pass? No, it's not. A 1-seat majority. How many low-T GOPers do we still have in the House? It doesn't have to be many. In fact, it can be, like 2, and we're screwed. So no, we're not going to end up impeaching him. And even if they do end up impeaching him, which they will not, he's not going to be convicted in the Senate. But remember this, remember. Donald Trump wasn't convicted in the Senate for either of his impeachments. But it still mattered, and it still hurt him a lot. It hurt him a lot, because once you impeach somebody as a president, you take him And in front of the public, you drag him through the mud, and he comes out on the other end, not as shiny and squeaky clean as he did before. There's no way to emerge from an impeachment inquiry with the same reputation you had going in. It's just the way it works. This is going to hurt Democrats. It's going to hurt Joe Biden, so that's a good thing. Now, the Hunter Biden stuff. House said, hey, Hunter, come here. You have to come give testimony, closed-door testimony. Hunter Biden decided he's not going to do that. Instead, Hunter Biden got up and gave a very obviously written political speech. Here it was.
For 6 years, I have been the target of the unrelenting Trump attack machine shouting, where's Hunter? Well, here's my answer. I am here. Let me state as clearly as I can. My father was not financially involved in my business, not as a practicing lawyer, not as a board member of Burisma, not in my partnership with a Chinese private businessman, not in my investments at home nor abroad, and certainly not as an artist. And in the depths of my addiction, I was extremely irresponsible with my finances. But to suggest that as grounds for an impeachment inquiry is beyond the absurd. It's shameless. There is no evidence to support the allegations that my father was financially involved in my business because it did not happen.
Okay. Don't yell and throw things at the TV with all the lies you just heard there. There's all kinds of evidence. We know Joe Biden was involved. We know all those things. That was just Hunter Biden giving a speech written for him by the lawyers and prepping the ground. What you saw there was simply a preview for what the Biden family defense is going to be. Did you notice the whole financially involved thing? In case you missed it, did you notice this?
Mr. Vice President, how many times have you ever spoken to your son about his overseas business dealings?
I've never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings.
And so how?
The president was never in business with his son. I just don't have anything else to add.
My father was not financially involved in my business.
Yeah, what they're going to try to do is split the baby here. There's no way to argue that this isn't Joe Biden's business. Everyone can tell it's Joe Biden's business and that Hunter Biden was the bag man for Joe Biden's business. But what they're going to do is actually, I'm not even trying to just be over the top for TV, they're going to try to do what mob bosses do. You know, when the boss has one of his underlings get busted selling crack or something like that. Have you ever paid any attention to these RICO trials when the mob boss gets in there? It almost always goes something like this. Well, sure, I know Fat Tony. Yeah, I'm friends with Fat Tony. Of course, I'm the godfather to Fat Tony's kid. But we're not in business together. No, I don't know anything about this crack stuff. I never received any money. Do you have any evidence of me receiving any money? Do you have pictures or video of me receiving money? No, you don't, because Fat Tony and I aren't financially involved. You'll see all kinds of this. Now, Hunter Biden said he's not going to speak privately. He's going to speak publicly. Here he was.
They have no shame. These same committee chairmen have engaged in unprecedented political interference in what would have already been a 5-year investigation of me. Yet, here I am, Mr. Chairman, taking up your offer when you said we can bring these people in for depositions or committee hearings, whichever they choose. Well, I've chosen. I am here to testify at a public hearing today.
He knew there was no public hearing. It wasn't even an option today. What's he doing there? It's very smart, actually. Don't get mad at him. He's very smart. He's controlling the ground. You see, if you walk into that closed-door meeting the House was going to have with you, this was all going to be official. It was all going to be recorded. You were going to be forced to answer some very difficult questions. You don't walk into your enemy's territory and subject yourself to his questions. That's like something the GOP would do. Hunter Biden is a Democrat. He's much smarter than that. He chooses the ground. So he doesn't walk in there to their private hearing. He stands out there. He gives a speech, tries to clean up his name. Okay. Now, where's it going to go from here? They're going to lie. They'll give enough lies that the low-T GOP won't be able to convict. But the lies aren't going to be that convincing. It's going to be a whole lot of, well, you saw this today from AOC.
That not only is the committee not allowing Hunter Biden to testify publicly, but they have not called a single witness, a single first-hand witness to any of their allegations. They haven't allowed anybody to testify publicly because they do not have a single witness to any of their alleged allegations. They don't.
They're alleged allegations. I'm sorry. Anyway, of course, we do. It's, again, these things are known. Tony Bobulinski, Devin Archer. We have texts, emails, we have checks. We have there's an overwhelming amount of evidence. If this was a normal trial, Joe Biden would be convicted and so would Hunter. Where it's going to go from here, well, I already explained. There's not going to be an actual impeachment. They're not going to remove Joe Biden from office. What we're going to get from here is a bunch of mud to throw at Democrats in an election year. Now, if that makes you uncomfortable, Jesse, I don't like that kind of politics, then you need to buck up, Buttercup, because that's the system we live in, and they're going to be chucking it, and you've got to chuck it back. You don't win in this world by being above it. You get knee-deep in it. There's value in this. It's a good thing. It's a good day. Put a smile on your face. Let's talk to Margo Cleveland about all this stuff. Is Hunter Biden going to go to jail? He defied a subpoena and all these other things. Talk to Margo about that and much, much more in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's do this. You've heard a lot of stuff recently because of that COP28 summit, that climate summit in Dubai, about agriculture. We've got to deal with the agriculture. Deal with agriculture. You've heard John Kerry say, we've got to deal with agriculture. What are they saying? What's that mean? They're going to reduce the world's food supply so people starve to death. I don't have another way to put it. Look, you don't have to take my word for it. I don't want you to. Go look into it. That's their plan. They're going to reduce the emissions from food by eliminating the food. The people who run the world are eliminating the food supply. What are you doing to prepare for food dislocation in the future? My Patriot Supply, they have four-week food kits, emergency food kits. Buy it, stash it. Don't eat it, please. Buy it and stash it. They're $60 off right now. And you order by 3 p.m., same-day shipping. Go to preparewithjessekelly.com. That's $60 off a four-week food supply. Preparewithjessekelly.com. I pray to God it goes to waste one day. I don't think it will. Go. We'll be back.
I hope that the committee goes after them and holds them accountable.
Should they be prosecuted by the Justice Department?
I do, yes.
Prosecuted for defying a subpoena. What does all this subpoena stuff even mean? I don't even understand. Let's ask Margo about it. Joining me now, Margo Cleveland Siegel, senior legal correspondent. Easy for me to say for the Great Federalist. Okay, Margo, the House says Hunter needs to come. Hunter's not going to show up. What does any of this mean? Is Hunter Biden going to prison tomorrow?
No, he's not going to prison tomorrow. But he did actually show up just outside of Congress to launch his latest career, which is apparently acting. So we see that he has no problem talking about anything he wants to talk about, which is the addiction that he went through and the recovery and how bad MAGA Republicans are. But when it comes to answering anything about the financial and his father's relationship with that, he does not want to talk. So what's going to happen next? We've already seen that the House says they're going to enforce the subpoena. Doubt he's going to jail because he will be able to allege as a defense that he has the Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate himself. And that'll probably keep him out of the pokey and not have to go to jail for it. But it was actually more entertaining to see his explanation than anything. He's done two things in this clip here. He's tried to take the investigation about his father and blur that with Hunter Biden's own misconduct. And then he's tried to make his own misconduct sound like mere mistakes while he was in the throes of addiction. When we're not talking about mere mistakes, we're talking about tax evasion, gun offenses. And we're not talking about when he was in the throes of his addiction, which the recent indictment in California made clear that the evasion happened, I think it was 2020. It was after he was in recovery when he made these false representations, saying that these payments to hookers were valid business expenses, that paying his daughter's law school tuition was a business expense. That had nothing to do with his addiction. So we got two huge problems with his nice sob story performance today. The impeachment inquiry has nothing to do with Hunter Biden, other than he's a witness and knows what favors his father did and how he benefited personally, his family benefited by using the Biden family name. And his addiction problem has nothing to do with his criminal conduct. So it was a good performance for giving us a lot to talk about.
Margo, where do we go from here? Because Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro, they did the same thing that Hunter Biden did. They're going to prison for it, or jail, or whatever it is. I don't know all the legal speak, but they're going to be locked up in a cage somewhere. If that's not going to happen to Hunter, why? Or is it going to happen eventually?
I don't think it is, and I think that the answer is, in this case, what he would be saying would be incriminating himself. So he has a constitutional right not to testify and a valid basis for doing that. He's probably never going to see behind a bar anyway. His father's going to, if he ever would get sentenced, is going to pardon him, which, frankly, I have no problem with. It's his kid. He's got the power. The power of pardon is oftentimes used for family, friends, powerful people. So, you know, if you're going to pardon anybody, you might as well be the kid.
Okay. Margo, before we get to the lawsuit, which I'm very, very excited about, these sure. charges he is facing, forget all the House and subpoena and impeachment stuff, he is facing some very real charges from David Weiss. Whether or not we believe this is going to be pursued to its fullest extent, well, David Weiss is the one who already tried to get him a sweetheart deal, but how much trouble is he in?
Well, if these cases go forward, he is in a lot of trouble, especially in the tax case, because we're not talking about not paying your taxes. That's part of it. But there was claims of actual evasion, where false statements were made about how much he owed the government, how much was legitimate revenue, how much was legitimate deductions. But even with those serious charges, the more serious ones are not anywhere in here. That has to do with the influence peddling, potential money laundering, FARA violations, bribery, and the rest of the issues. And we saw this, and I actually had an article on it on Monday, that in the California tax indictment, Weiss is still acting like this $1 million he got from Patrick Ho was for Hunter Biden providing him legal representation back in 2018. And we know that's not the case. The money never went to the Hunter Biden law firm. The money wasn't spent for legal fees. It was spent for his lavish lifestyle. And yet there were no charges made in any way, shape, or form connected to that $1 million.
Margo, tell me why you, Daily Wire, State of Texas, why are you guys suing the State Department? What's going on? You guys just want money?
No, in fact, there is no claim for money at all in this case. What the clients, and I'm an attorney with the New Civil Liberties Alliance, as well as my freelance work, what the New Civil Liberties Alliance is alleging on behalf of its clients, the Daily Wire and the Federalist, is that the State Department engaged in a censorship scheme that was ultra vires, meaning beyond the authority of the State Department. And the State Department only has authority to act with foreign affairs. So that's one of the things. The State Department was acting domestically in order to promote the censorship of speech. But it wasn't merely the promotion. this is what the State Department did. And it's somewhat convoluted, but at its core, very simple. The State Department, with tax dollars, had employees on the government payroll and outside contractors research all of this new technology, artificial intelligence, machine learning, ranking systems, technology that was designed to combat supposed misinformation and disinformation. And how do you combat it? You censor it. So the State Department paid with our tax dollars people to go and research this technology. They looked at over 365 different types of technology. Then the State Department, which had a platform that was supposed to be for the government and the military, put these technologies on that platform. State Department went out and went to big tech and said, hey, LinkedIn, Google, Twitter, come and join this group called DisinfoCloud, this platform that was created for the government and the military, and test out all this technology to see what can, quote, meet your needs. They helped promote this to these outside companies to use this technology domestically, and the technology has the ability to censor speech. We don't know the extent of it, but we do know that two of the technologies that were on this platform were NewsGuard and the Global Disinformation Index. And this is from open source. We don't even have any of the discovery what the State Department was doing behind the scenes. Both of these resources do supposed verification of the legitimacy of media outlets. So what do we have for media outlets? NewsGuard and the Global Disinformation Index both rated the Federalist and the Daily Wire as either risky in the case of the Global Disinformation Index or unreliable in the case of NewsGuard. The State Department had that technology on this platform. It promoted it through a website that was used by the folks that were paid by the State Department to put this information out there. It was promoted and marketed and said, hey, use this to help combat disinformation and misinformation. So the Daily Wire and the Federalist very simply want the State Department to stop violating the rights of free press and the rights of the freedom of the speech, of freedom of speech.
What a creepy, creepy government we have now. Margot, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Go get them. Go get these people. All right. We have a lot still. They're shutting down bridges, shutting down roads, all these Hamas nutters. Let's talk to Andy Ngo about that. He knows Antifa well. Has he noticed any familiar faces or masks in the whole group? We'll talk to Andy about that. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Our dogs. In America, there is something sad. Our dogs die years before they should. You know that? And think about all the dogs you've had. I think about all the dogs I've had. 10, 11, they kick on, don't they? Well, that's because they never get real nutrition. Other countries around the world that don't feed their dogs our dog food, the brown, dead stuff, their dogs live years longer. Give your dog nutrition. You don't have to change the food. Pour Rough Greens on the dog's food. It's an all-natural nutritional supplement. You pour it on the dog's food, the dog loves it, and the dog finally gets vitamins and minerals and probiotics, omega oils. You'll see a health difference in your dog, and you'll have your puppy longer. Don't you want that? Don't we all want that? Free Jumpstart trial bags. Call them 833-33-MY-DOG or roughgreens.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Ceasefire now! 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 Ceasefire now!
kind of weird. It's a Christmas tree and a Christmas celebration. Bunch of Palestinian Hamas people chanting ceasefire. That's odd, this crossover we see all the time. Joining me now, somebody who knows these people, Andy Ngo, senior editor of the Post Millennial. Okay, Andy, obviously that was taken just outside of Portland. Why are these people protesting at a Christmas tree? Could you please explain what exactly I'm seeing here, Andy?
So these left-wing protests kind of, they go in cycles, and BLM is a bit out of vogue now. We haven't had another George Floyd moment for a few years. There were some trans issues that happened last year and earlier this year, but the current trendy fad to get on top of if you're a leftist and if you're easily manipulated is on the Palestinian nationalist cause. So there have been young people, unfortunately a lot of children, being manipulated by left-wing activists, many of them who were involved in the 2020 BLM Antifa riots, directing people to go out and confront politicians, mayors, anywhere and everywhere they can. And they're a bit so desperate for getting out on the streets that they're targeting events that have little to no, that could have little to no impact on anything that's happening in the Middle East conflict. So trying to shut down a Christmas tree lighting event in Portland or in a neighboring suburb in this particular case is what they've been doing. You see that this has been happening in left-wing cities across the US. Similar actions have been taken in New York, where people go to Times Square and try to disrupt traffic, attack police, vandalize Starbucks, go into various businesses and cause a scene. And all of it really at the end of the day has no effect on in terms of policies regarding what's happening in Israel versus Hamas. However, with that said, one thing it does do is that it does radicalize another generation of people to be the foot soldiers for causes that are cyclical in a way.
Andy, kind of an odd question, but I am curious, who are these people who show up to these things, whether it be the leaders or the new recruits? Are we talking about the dregs of society here? Is it a bunch of drugged out criminals they pulled out of a ditch somewhere? Are these white suburban kids who are just bored and have daddy's credit card for the weekend? Who are these people?
So the current protest movement that we're seeing in Western countries is a bit different from the BLM coalition that we saw previously, in that it does bring out the same groups of people and sometimes literally the same individuals. However, one additional faction that has been pulled in have been Muslim activists. And so now this introduces, in some cases, a religious dimension. And in my opinion, a religious fundamentalist angle to these protests. There were just demonstrations that happened this week in a Jewish neighborhood in Queens, New York, where Muslim protesters waving the Palestinian flag specifically were marching in front of Jewish religious centers and Jewish businesses, and then stopped to do street prayers in a way that, in my opinion, is meant to be very provocative. In Europe, and what I've seen myself on the streets of London, are people who will bring the black flag of the Islamic faith creed that is often associated with jihadist movements. People bringing, in America, there have been those who have brought Hamas flags to demonstrations. So this is a current mutation of this growing left-wing coalition that brings in those who have grievances. Many of those grievances are based on lies. However, it radicalizes them into taking direct action.
Okay, then Andy, explain this for people who are confused. You've been doing some reporting on, for instance, this 28-year-old, a child of a Connecticut deputy attorney general, who got busted doing anti-Semitic hate crimes. What is a tranny? That's who this guy was. I don't know whether it's a dude or a chick. You can't tell anymore. But what is a tranny doing linking up with the jihadis?
So Sarah Stofko is the 28-year-old biological female daughter of Connecticut's Deputy Associate Attorney General. Sarah Stofkoff is the legal name, what she was booked under. However, her mother refers to her as he, him, and Sarah on social media goes by the male alias Isaac. So law enforcement in Newtown, Connecticut, which is the wealthiest county in Connecticut, arrested Sarah on allegations, on suspicions that she committed an anti-Semitic felony hate crime. So she has a court date coming up later on this month. I wrote a report about this. I reached out to the family and her attorney for comment. They both declined to comment. Her mother, unsurprisingly, works very closely with the Attorney General of Connecticut and has a history of left-wing liberal activism. If you look at her pictures, she's posing with people who are wearing the pink hats that were very popular after Trump's 2017 inauguration, and trans activist posts on the mother's account. The reason why, in my opinion, the trans identity of this alleged of the suspect in this alleged anti-Semitic hate crime, why it's relevant is that part of this coalition has brought in a lot of sort of strange bedfellows. You don't think, on the face of it, you wouldn't think that trans activists, queer activists would march alongside or express support with radical fundamentalist Muslims, given what happens to LGBTQ plus people in Muslim societies quite often. However, here we are, we see them marching along, often Queers for Palestine or Trans for Palestine will be at the forefront of these marches. And I think even though there are inconsistencies in their various ideologies, where it is coherent is that they share a common enemy. And the common enemy, and this isn't what they say, is that they hate America. They view America and its friends and allies on the global stage, in this particular case, Israel, as also enemies that should be destroyed.
Andy, you are based in London now, and while I've never been, I passed through the airport, even though that airport sucks. I hear great things about London, but the food, Andy, how has it been adjusting to the food over there? Beans on toast and stuff? It looks really bad, dude. It looks really bad.
So, I mean, there's a history behind some of this, some of the culinary traditions here that outsiders might mock or think is funny. It comes from particularly how they had to do rationing during the Second World War. And so, you know, there's a generation who still have in their living memory what it was like to actually have to fight on their land a war. Americans, fortunately, had not had to experience that. But so, you know, I look on some of these peculiar culinary traditions in a way that I find actually very sweet. However, I think the UK is more so recognized for its Indian cuisine now than anything else, actually.
Yeah. I think it's disgusting. And anyway, let's talk about this really quickly before I let you go. Elite communist scum historically have turned on the street communist scum as soon as they've served their purposes. The street communists never actually achieve any power. They're normally taken out and shot. Stalin, Mao, all of them, they ended up getting rid of all the street communists once they became a problem. Are America's street communists starting to become a problem for Democrats, or are they still a benefit? The BLM riots did not hurt Democrats. They helped them. Are we still in that news cycle?
So there's a particular interesting clash that's been developing with mainstream Democrats and those on the to the left of them, on the hard left or the far left, in that there is this fault line, particularly on the issue of Israel. Up until now, Americans, regardless of party, have been very united in their support for the modern state of Israel. And however, the radical left and in some factions of the hard right as well have taken on a view that is very anti-Israel, and it's created an issue, I would say, more so for Democrats and Republicans currently, because you have many outspoken Congress members who have expressed views that, in my view, are quite heinous, either whitewashing what Hamas did or denying the atrocities that have taken place. I think currently, though, the militants, leftist militants, still generally serve a function that is overall beneficial to Democrats, and that through the use of violence, they are very effective in shutting down grassroots organizing by conservatives. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but hopefully decent Democrats and mainstream liberals recognize that the militants that they've been empowering is not a segment of on their side that they can always have control of. Sometimes they and we can see, in fact, actually how Democrat politicians have been particularly targeted by these radical pro-Palestinian militant protesters.
Andy, I appreciate you, my man. As always, stay safe out there. All right. All these things we're seeing now has happened before. They've happened before. That's how we end up seeing things that are coming so often. We just read history. Want to talk a little bit of history about this next? Let's do that in just a moment. Before we do that, get an attorney. You need an attorney. Jesse, not me. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not a business executive. If you are a human being now who has right-wing thoughts, opinions, maybe you carry a weapon on you, you need to have attorneys. An attorney. 24/7 legal representation. Attorneys for Freedom, that's what they do. They represent normal people like you and me. I hope you never have to make that phone call. But when you live in a country where the justice system has turned against you, legal representation can oftentimes be the difference between you being free and you going to prison for the rest of your life. Call them. attorneysonretainer.us, promo code Jesse, all right? attorneysonretainer.us, promo code Jesse. We'll be back. Queers for Palestine. I didn't come up with that. Don't yell at me. That's what they call themselves. Queers for Palestine. That's interesting. I wonder if there's any history behind all this stuff. I bet Julie knows. Joining me now, Julie Belling, author of the book Beneath Sheep's Clothing, Communist Takeover of Culture in the USSR and the Parallels in Today's America. I'm already hooked. Julie, So many people have emailed my show and asked me, Jesse, queers for Palestine, I don't understand. Are they confused? They wouldn't even be welcome in Palestine. Would you please explain this to people?
Sure. So Marxists like to identify a group of people who are oppressed or who can be made to feel oppressed. And then they sick them like a rabid dog onto their oppressor class. And they can cobble together any number of different oppressed groups to band together, at least temporarily, until one of them cannibalizes the other, which is likely to happen in this instance. And it's just the Marxist playbook to destabilize society, prepare it for communism.
Now, how does shutting down Manhattan Bridge translate into power for the people who want it? Does it make sense?
Well, I mean, these Communists have been using this since even in the very early days of the Soviet Union. They would gather up the peasants and they'd have these handmade placards and they'd be marching. It's just one of their strategies to mobilize the people. And apparently it works because they've been very successful throughout, you know, the 20th century and beyond, unfortunately.
Why the chanting? Why so much chanting? All these people are chanting all the time. Every piece of communist trash in this country loves to chant. Why do they do that?
Well, these slogans, I mean, it's sad, and I don't have animosity towards these people, but they're basically brainwashed into a cult, and having these slogans, it reinforces the cult programming, and they also are hoping to program bystanders in the process, and it works to a great degree. I mean, just look at the success of communist movements throughout history.
Yeah, no, it does. Julie, thank you so much. I appreciate you very much. That was awesome. Thank you. Anti-communism for everybody, all right? All right. All right. We have a different light in the mood coming up. I think you will enjoy it. Hang on. It's Christmas time. Isn't that wonderful? Everybody loves the Christmas season, or I should say most people love the Christmas season. We should also keep in mind that this season can be very hard for some people. It can be very, very, very hard for veterans. We are still losing far too many of them, and sadly, the suicide numbers are actually getting worse, not better. And a lot of people are having a hard time understanding that. They have a hard time understanding what a lot of these guys are going through. Let's talk to Nick about that. Joining me now, Nick Armendariz, Director of Programs for the Independence Fund, of course, veteran. Nick, why are these numbers going up? A lot of people look, civilian types look, and they look and they think to themselves, okay, Afghanistan's done and Iraq's pretty much wrapped up. Shouldn't all these guys just be happy and healthy and all smiles and barbecue and whatnot? Why are vets so down?
Well, appreciate you having me on and answer that question. You know, I think the time of year for a lot of these guys is they're missing some of that peer-to-peer support, some of that peer-to-peer connection, and that what we see a lot of times is, you know, that bigger tribe of, you know, veterans and who we are, what we've done together, and sharing some of those similar and shared experiences through, you know, built in the forge in combat. So you get back, and a lot of these guys don't necessarily maybe have some families, they don't have places to go, and they're missing that unique part of, you know, just what it is to be human and having interpersonal connections, interpersonal communications with those. And a lot of them shut themselves in. They find themselves in kind of a dark spot, and you know, we've all been there, and it's hard for them to pull themselves out. So, you know, couple that with just the holidays and families and everybody being around, and I'm sure, you know, all plays out and works out to being kind of a pretty traumatic time.
Yeah, I've been there myself, locked in my apartment with nothing but me and some beer, and it was not a great place for me. Okay, Nick, what is the Independence Fund? What does it do?
So the Independence Fund was founded in 2007, and the Independence Fund is committed to serving the warfighter community by providing innovative programs and services to support the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual independence of our service members, combat veterans, caregivers, families, and a lot of the allies now that have served alongside our troops while deployed. We do this kind of through our innovative mobility and adaptive supports technologies, therapies for combat veterans, suicide prevention, caregiver, family support, and veteran advocacy with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, other government agencies, federal and state legislators, and other partners. So we kind of provide this wraparound approach for the veterans that we serve. And we do serve a very specific population of veterans, those being catastrophically wounded, ill, and injured veterans.
If that is you, if you are a veteran like that, you need some help, you want to talk to somebody, I encourage you, all of you, to reach out to the Independence Fund. Nick, I appreciate you, my brother. Semper Fi, I appreciate what you do very much. All right. Look, if this is a hard time for you, reach out. All right? Reach out. There are guys who care, and there are guys who know. And I've been there, man. I've been there in a very, very dark place. I know. You can come out of it. You can. Doesn't feel like you can, but you can. All right? All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.